Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. We had a series of unfortunate events this week, and so our post or subject for the day did not get posted. Have no fear. What I am trying to do today is because I have called many times for people to call in, because this is a show that caters to what you need, the questions that you have, the rumors that you have heard, that we sometimes wonder if they're true. I had certainly lots of questions as I was coming along. And many times I didn't know where to start looking for information because I hadn't figured out what information I wanted to know. I knew that what I was being told was not true. I had not yet figured out why that was so. Why wouldn't somebody want me to know about my ancestors? After all, we study about it in the Bible, and in many other times we talk about it. But in this particular case, it seems as if I have disappeared. All of my heritage has disappeared. Now, is that a subject only for Black people? No, it is definitely not, because there are many white people, Caucasians, Asians, Hispanic, and every other race and nationality that has been affected by this phenomenon. I'll call it a phenomenon. Certainly I have beliefs about what happened and why it happened. But we sometimes beguile ourselves or confuse ourselves or knowingly fall down a rabbit hole because we don't want to face the truth. Sometimes it hurts. And I'm sure that there are many people that just don't want to know. Because of what has gotten through, we have a catawampus picture of what history is all about. To those of you that are interested and will be near the Cowpens battlefield, which is in Chesney, South Carolina, about 10 miles from Spartanburg, we have not quite come to a steady conclusion about what day, whether it's the January the 13th or 14th, because there is a anniversary coming up to the Battle of Cowpens. And my subject, my talk, is going to be on Blacks in the American Revolutionary War. Blacks in the American Revolutionary War. As I came along as a child, I didn't know the difference between the American Revolutionary War and the Civil War. I had a hard time figuring it out. I knew that there were statues around, and in the heart of my hometown, Spartanburg, South Carolina, there is a statue of a military person by the name of Daniel Morgan. Didn't make much sense to me at the time whether it mattered that he was in the American Revolutionary War, or if he was in the Civil War. I was young. I did not understand it. If somebody had explained it to me, I probably still would not have known the difference until much later. We started impressing information on young people, and at that time, they're not really interested. We try to go through thousands of years of history in a very short period of time. And the thing that we do is we go through with one point of view. We don't look at it from the other person's point of view. This is one of the major reasons that we have a problem with our civil war, because that story is told from the point of view of the loser of that war. Most often what we see is history written by the loser. Is that going to be the way it is? Well, we could always look at it from the standpoint of the winner, but is that the correct point of view of history? I don't think so either. I think it is a combination of the two. But I was indoctrinated to the former. Now, I didn't agree with it. There were lots of things that I did not agree with. Now, as we talk, I want you to call in. It doesn't have to be on the subject that we're talking about at the time, because I have two posts coming up, the one that should have been posted this week and the one that should be appointed next week. Both of those are about a soldier by the name of William Henry Johnson, commonly known as Henry Johnson. He was born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Why don't I know him? That man was stationed in Spartanburg, South Carolina, prior to World War I. Many people don't realize that there was a camp here to train soldiers. It was called Camp Wadsworth. Camp Wadsworth is out in the area of the West Gate Mall. You would think that we would be very proud of that, that that would be a part of our history. I'm not sure why it is not. And as I reflect on this, this has given me some of my strongest emotional confusion ever about a topic. It ranks up there. And we'll use that. We'll use other parts of history. I will be repeating this number throughout the session. I've tried to make sure that I give it to you in previous sessions and in sessions to follow. And that is because it's important if you want to ask questions, you want to disagree with me, you have questions that you've not heard us talk about, but that you would like to hear us talk about. Some of these things include the fact that I had a relative who, you fill in the blank, is that a possibility? Now, on all of these questions, I'm not going to be able to give you an answer, but hopefully we can, because we're building up a dialogue. When I first found out about Black history, I was very, very disappointed. Not in the very beginning, because I saw George Washington Carver. And I was very proud of the fact that he even existed. Let me give you that number. 646-668-8217. Again, 646-668-8217. Programs that you hear on Crown Talking Drums, you can call in to the host using that number. Some people do not use it very much. I hope to use it a lot, because it is a two-way conversation. If I'm not talking about the things that you are interested in hearing, then I've missed a point. If I talk and you don't get your questions answered, you missed a point. On many of the topics that we talk about, I stumbled across because I did not take a course in Black studies. I had a very good friend at the University of Washington that was from Columbia, South Carolina, Talmadge Anderson, a great Black historian. Now, at that time, I was working as a chemist at Hanford, reprocessing nuclear fuels and materials, weapon-grade materials. And so I did not see how it would be important to know Black history. In fact, I didn't know how it would be useful to know any history. Because as I looked at those books, those people did not dress like me. They dressed funny. They were all white for the most part. And they were involved in things that did not affect me, or at least that I knew. I thought I was getting the God's honest truth when information was relayed to me. But there was so much that was beyond my comprehension. It is difficult to understand George Washington Carver without knowing more about him, without knowing more about what he endured as he sought to become recognized. Now, I don't know that he was out trying to be recognized as a celebrity, because much of what he did was to contribute back, paying it forward, whatever you want to call it, to the community that had supported him. He grew up somewhat in the North, but many times we feel that segregation, slavery, was only in the South, and that is far from the truth, far from the truth. We don't know that George Washington Carver's father was killed the week before he was born. We don't realize without somebody telling us that he was very sickly, that he, his brother, and his mother were stolen or kidnapped, whatever the words you want to use. But since George was sickly, the people that had stolen him, his brother, and his mother, dropped him off on the side of the road in a basket. The person that owned them paid money to have someone track down their property, not human beings, their property. We don't often make the jump from the difference between a human being and property until we look into the question of slavery. George was brilliant in school, but he was also brilliant outside of school. He never saw his mother again. I think he had run across some loose ends that gave him some information about his brother. And I think that he visited his brother's grave. But the real story of George Washington Carver is unknown by most people in America. I have a post on him. In fact, much of the information that I talk about on this program comes from my website, AmazingBlackHistory.com. That's AmazingBlackHistory.com. Now, you're listening, you're not Black, and you wonder if there is something here for you. I argue, yes, there is. There is an awful lot for you. Because many people believe that in America, we basically had two classes of people. We had two races of people. We had those that were slave owners, white, and those that were slaves, Black. Neither one of those statements is completely true. Neither one of them is completely true. But until we get down and get involved in what is and what isn't, we come up with false conclusions. We say we must study history or else we're bound to repeat it. I agree with that statement. But most of us do not study history. There are those that know something about it. There are those of us who know a little bit about a specific topic that may be above and beyond normal. But I would say that most people in America know very little history. Very little history. As we look at the American Revolutionary War, I had somebody ask me a question. And this is one of the reasons that I want to understand your questions, your concerns, and make an attempt to answer them. Because most people believe that about the time of the American Civil War, all blacks were here. Many of them do not have any comprehension of the number that were here, let alone that some were free, let alone that some participated in the disengagement between America and the United Kingdom, Britain. Don't know about it because we've never been set up to ask the question. I'm still encouraging people to call in. I'll see you on my dashboard if you call in. I do not see you if you're listening on your device or through the internet. Even a smartphone where you are listening now, I cannot see that device. But if you call in, 646-668-8217, I will see you on the dashboard. I ask that you keep your questions civil because I encourage people to have younger listeners, younger readers join us because there's nothing in history that they can't understand or comprehend. And we need to establish that now. My reason for not being interested in history is I could not make the connection between myself and anything that had happened in history. I understood that there was slavery, but I only knew it on the surface. I did not realize how cruel it was to many people. I did not understand how it only made a few people wealthy. When we look at the American Civil War, New York seriously considered joining the Confederacy. Why? Because they were shipping goods out of New York worldwide. They were shipping them to the United Kingdom and other places in the world. And we were a major supplier of goods such as cotton, rice, other materials around the world. And it was such an important part of the economics that they considered joining the Confederacy. In the early beginning, we see that France and even England considered joining the Confederacy to fight for it. We don't hear this. But when we look back at our first models, where we talked about being either a slave owner or a slave, most whites did not own slaves to the extent of a very few. very few white people owned enough slaves to be profitable, but they were extremely profitable. Now, let's look at what that means, what it translates out to. They didn't have to pay for their land because it was stolen from the Native Americans. Now, how silly is it that we tell the story that, and it's estimated that there were 15 million people living in the Americas. What do I mean by the Americas? We have, of course, America. We have Canada. We have areas to the north of that. We have Mexico. We have Central America. We have South America. Now, let us be clear about one thing. Christopher Columbus never, never set foot in North America. But we praise him, we honor him as if he were the person. Now also, let's look at the concept. How do you tell 15 million people that, in essence, they didn't exist until we came to the point of discovering them? There is so much history in America that we don't want people to know. I saw a designation take place, I believe it is in Ohio, about large structures, some of them made of earth, but we have not figured out what, why, how, that they become, that they come to exist. So what do we do as historians? We write it out. I believe it's UNESCO that has recognized them among other extremely valuable places that we need to study. That's right here in America. There are people that do not know about it. Do not know about it. And we see that we're always talking about understanding this, understanding that. We have to be serious, folks, about what we're talking about. We look, and I've given this story before, features a slave owned by Cotton Mather. I've heard the name Cotton Mather, but the only thing I thought of was that's a funny name to name somebody, Cotton Mather. Now, he was a very prolific writer, but I believe it was in the 1500s or 1600s. We were faced with a smallpox epidemic, and it was killing a large number of people, a large percentage of the population. In fact, 14 out of every 100 people that got it died. I mean, that's a big number. And Cotton Mather was talking to Onesimus, the slave. Now, I want you to understand that in many cases, people did not communicate merely on the basis of race. But Cotton Mather asked Onesimus, have you ever had smallpox? To which his answer was yes and no. Cotton Mather probed further. And Onesimus described to him how they vaccinated people in Africa. Now understand, this is in the 1600s, 1600, that period of time, maybe a little earlier, a little later. But he described to them how people in Africa were vaccinating each other. In America, we had no idea what to do. None. This is supposed to be the greatest country ever. But we didn't have that knowledge. The people of Africa, whom we try to depict as the most stupid people on the face of the earth, knew about it. So what did they do? They didn't have hypodermic needles. They didn't have Big Pharma, but they knew enough to take a thorn and put it in the fluid of the pox that showed up on the skin of people that were infected. They would then take that and scratch the skin of a healthy person, thereby allowing them to build up an immunity. So let's look at the statistics. Cotton Mather was not a doctor, but he provided information to a doctor who agreed to do some experiments with this. As we go through the experiments, we find, like I said earlier, that 14 out of every 100 people that caught smallpox died. 14 out of 100. But then when we look at those that were vaccinated, 2 out of 100 died. We never have given credit to black people for anything. Now, everybody that came over here did not pick cotton in Africa, thank you. They came over. Well, they didn't just come over. They were captured and enslaved by people. And when we look at the conditions that they had to endure, they were not pleasant, not by a long shot. I'm going to give that number again. I'm going to keep doing this because I want us to have a conversation. We have a couple of people on at this point. But don't be afraid not to know. My body of work has centered around the fact that I did not know, and I wanted to know. I did not know where to find. I did not know the questions to ask, but I stumbled at it. I stumbled at it and have built up some knowledge of what's going on. That's how I have done most of my discoveries. I hear things, and rather than letting them go in one ear and out the other, I've tried to capture as much of that, and I've tried to look for information on that. I want to tell you about an incident that I had happen to me as a person in Spartanburg, because I left Spartanburg, I went to Washington State, came back, and was along the way was fascinated by the information that I could discover. Now, that information or that number to call in with your questions, your comments, the rumors, whatever, is 646-668-8217. You know, what does it take to get you to call in? Do I have to dare you to call in? Do I have to have a stump the chump session where you call in and see if you can stump me? I don't think that that's necessary, but if that's what we'll have to do, we have to do it. That number again is 646-668-8217. So we find that even medically, that there was a lot of information in Africa. In other words, or not in other words, but if we study the early Greeks, the early Romans, we find that they sent their students to Africa to be educated. Now, is that something that you would ever have suspected? Ever, ever? We have places there such as Timbuktu, funny sounding place, but there are thousands upon thousands of manuscripts that still have not been translated. Part of that reason probably has been that we aren't interested in anything that comes from there, although we find that it's popping up every day. Let me tell you about something that you may not know. But we have one of our most popular drinks alcoholic drinks in America. Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels was brewed by Jason Newton Daniel. His chief, the head of the distillery, was a black man, commonly called Nearest Green. And they did a charcoal filtering on that product. Where did he learn that? Africa. He came here and he developed that spirit. But one of the things that I want to make a distinguishing comment about is that Jason Newton Daniel, a.k.a. Jack Daniel, paid people the same based on the job as everybody else. There wasn't a separate wage for blacks and whites, as was so common in America. This is one of the reasons we have such a wealth gap, because these people weren't paid. They couldn't buy land. They couldn't do anything. They had given centuries of free service to America. Centuries. Now let me go back, because this reminds me that I did not close a loop that was opened earlier. At the time of the American Revolutionary War broke out, it's estimated that we had 2.2 million people of African ancestry in the United States. 2.2 million. Were all of them enslaved? No. All of them were not enslaved. Some had never been enslaved, had never been enslaved. Some were free. So we look at there being slightly over 2% that were free when the American Revolutionary War broke out. When it broke out. So we're talking about the 1770s. You know, we're a long way from that now. But there were black people free back then. I can give you some other stories that show what these people did. But when we went to war, seeking our freedom from the United Kingdom, it was a matter of we were being taxed, but we had no representation. When I first heard about that, it didn't make any difference to me either, because I was so young, I did not understand the significance of it. Sometimes we have to live life a while and go back and find out the hook, how we are involved in it. But when we look at what was leading up to the American Revolutionary War, we find that a few times action did break out, but it was mostly in the way of a couple of people going to Fist City, going to fisticuffs, just pure physical hands is all that was happening. The first person to actually die in the American Revolutionary War was a man described as a mulatto, which is generally a mixed heritage person, over 6 foot tall, was the first person to die in the American Revolutionary War. Wouldn't you think that is significant, particularly since we have organizations that are well-respected, such as the Daughters of the American Revolution? That in and of itself may sound benign to you, but when we look at the number of people that went to war, we had white citizens that had black children, and we face I don't face the question of that happening. But when we look back and realize that we've got over 50,000 black people free, some of them decided to participate in this war. Some of them decided to participate in this war. But we want to act as if they did not. We weren't going to run away, but it destroys part of the image that we have put out. It said we didn't have the courage to do anything for our own good, that it was benevolent. Best thing that ever happened to these people was that they were enslaved, because they didn't have to make decisions. They didn't have to decide what to do, how to do, because they could not do it. Now, if any of you know any people of a different race, you'll find that to be unbelievable, because we can. Those people that can't are institutionalized. We did not fall in that category. The category we fell in was those people wealthy enough to own enough people that they could get more than their share of the American dream and leave those people that they were profiting from hanging out to dry. Hanging out to dry. This is what's taking place. So I hope that on January 13th or 14th, and as I find more information, I'll let you know about blacks in the American Revolutionary War. We've talked about Crispus Attucks, but we also talk about and don't talk about other people that played a significant role. We know about Paul Revere. Paul Revere riding through the countryside saying the British are coming. Hogwash. Did not happen, because there were many loyalists. There were many people loyal to Britain. And this idiot had come running down the road on a horse in the middle of the night, hollering the British are coming. Some of those people would have stopped him, and there's no way that he would have gotten through. In fact, he did not get through. He was captured. But we don't know that. History doesn't tell us that. So what's the significance of that story? Anybody ever heard of Sybil Ludington? Sybil Ludington. You hear that name, but it does not ring a bell. 10-year-old white girl who also rode the same night as Paul Revere. How many of you have ever come across history that mentioned this little white girl that warned people that the British were coming? Paul Revere rode west. We had a gentleman that rode north by the name of Wentworth Cheswell. Wentworth Cheswell was a judge, a black judge. He rode north. The reinforcements that saved our bacon came from the north. When we don't know this and we don't recognize this, we sometimes put people in a box. And that box is not a good box to be in. It's almost like being incarcerated without having committed a crime. And certainly we have enough of those cases, because we don't speak up. We don't ask questions. We put people in positions and assume that everything they're telling us is correct. They're not, and we knowingly allow it to happen. We're complicit. We're complicit with that. So as we look at our history, we see many examples where we have not asked the right questions. I'm going to give that number again. We've got approximately 45 minutes in this particular broadcast. But I want you to go to AmazingBlackHistory.com. Click on blog list, B-L-O-G-L-I-S-T. You'll see well over 300 posts that relate to the topic that we're talking about. All of it is not about war, but there are some embarrassing things in there when we look at our country as a whole. Because I started talking about Henry Johnson, born in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, was stationed in Spartanburg, was sent to war. I've been trying to track this particular fact down. There is supposedly a letter in the files of Chapman Cultural Center. Chapman Cultural Center. That letter basically is a letter from, I believe, the mayor of Spartanburg, who was Mayor Floyd at the time, telling the United States government, we're not going to lift a finger to protect these soldiers. Now, they had begged, pleaded, and done everything they could to get a base here. But they assumed that the only thing coming were white soldiers. White soldiers. So they did not. Now, the unit that I'm talking about started out as the New York 15th. New York 15th. We'll see this as we go through history. Sometimes the names of units get changed. Everybody in the Massachusetts 54th, which was glorified in the movie Glory, was not from Massachusetts. There are, and there is a possibility that some of these people were from the Carolinas, because as you move people around, you end up with conglomerates such as this. Generally, it's a good thing. And I believe in this case, it was. But we don't talk about the Massachusetts 55th. Massachusetts 55th? Who in the heck are they? When it became possible for us to join the Civil War. I remember everybody did not want black people to have guns. So many people volunteered that they had to form another regiment. So many. And yet for years we've been depicted as being afraid of any and everything. The old pictures of Willie, his eyes bucking out of his head, and he acting like a complete total fool, are what many remember. Did not happen. Did not happen that way. As a result, many white people who were in the same or almost same situation as the enslaved grew up feeling superior to everybody else. Not true. Not true. Now, I'm sure some of you listening are jumping up and down. I have a question. Well, I have an answer. Call in 646-668-8217. It's not my intent to embarrass you. It is not my intent to make you look dumb. It's my intent to open a dialogue. You know, I worked with people in Washington State. Very low percentage of non-whites where I lived. But some of my best friends, we started out with difficult conversations. I soon learned that this person had grown up. All black people were the N-word. That helped me, because I understood where he came from. I understood how he developed his attitude. We could talk about it. We were friends. There were other things that we disagreed on. But it started with a conversation. I was recently talking to a friend and said, you know, when I came along right here in Spartanburg, we had two black police officers on the entire force, two. But they were not allowed to arrest any white people, no matter the crime. They could call for a white officer, and that white officer would decide whether he wanted to arrest them or not. What do you think that does to people? Not just the two involved, but people that can see this. This is why when we had in the heat of the night and Sidney Poitier slapped that white man, that was a slap heard around the world because we put ourselves in boxes. You can be beaten, but you can't beat back, no matter how justified puts us in opposite camps. We'll never get our problems resolved. We'll never get the stories out where we can discuss them. I've had people slip and use the N-word around me. And we were good enough friends that he could tell me why he said it and what it meant. That is a start of a healing process. When we can talk about what happened, there to blame anybody. I don't blame people for slavery. It was something that their ancestors did. If you know a way to stop your ancestor from doing something before you were born, tell me about it. I want to make sure that we know how to do that. Now, I may look at you slant-eyed if you don't do anything from here out after we've had our discussion. I don't think that discussion is going to make either one of us totally clear, but at least it has started a conversation. One of the posts that I'm working on, or just posted, all black cities in America. All black cities in America? Yes. While people are going around saying that we cannot, we find that not only can we, but we have. Well, why don't these cities exist now? Probably for the same reason that my old homestead is not standing today. That house was built by my father. It was very, very solid. I've been in many houses, but this house was solidly built. No reason to tear it down. I see other people in my neighborhood who were getting old. Laws were written. The redlining. What does redlining? Banks don't loan anybody money to anybody to buy a house in this area. And how did they design which areas were redlined? If black people lived there, it was redlined. We see housing projects go up, both public and privately funded. But there was a rule that you could not build a residential housing development, either public or private, that was designed for more than one race. Ever heard that before? No. And on top of that, if you were able to buy a house, you cannot borrow money to fix it, to maintain it, as anybody else would. You find that the houses, or the value of houses, is depressed in these redlined areas. So you have a company come in and say, we need some land. I can steal it for you. I can do it under eminent domain, and it's legal. Now, what do we have here? We have the fragments of a community that are often now polluted with noise, with hazardous materials. They chop down all the trees, and so it's warmer and less healthy in the summer. All of these things have taken place right here under our noses. We've allowed it to happen. I don't know your definition of racist. Some people honestly have not seen the effects of this. But I've lived through them. Lived through them. I see them. When I went to college, I went in Salisbury, North Carolina. There were very clear demarcations when you went from the white neighborhood to the black. Because in many cases, the pavement stopped at that exact point. Salisbury was considered an all-America city. And I thought my college career was going to end at that point because I was taking an English class taught by a biblical professor. And one of the questions we were supposed to answer was, do you consider Salisbury an all-America city? No, absolutely not. And I mentioned these and other things along the way. I'm not supposed to take that position. I'm supposed to be on the hallelujah choir. Oh, yes, it's so nice. Even at that, I decided that I wanted to live in Salisbury. Fiber Industries moved in. Good paying jobs. I decided that I wouldn't mind living in North Carolina, particularly there. Chemistry background. They were producing chemicals and fibers and what have you that used a lot of chemical knowledge. This should be an ace for me. So I applied. In fact, there were four of us that applied. Three of us had chemistry backgrounds. We were working on degrees in chemistry. By the time we got back, one guy had been offered a job. And we are puzzled. How did you get a job? And we haven't. He said, I only put down that I went to high school. Ah, overqualified. I thought that was a lie. But I see that it is. When we look at people and we don't see them for what they are capable of doing, but what we think they are able to do, we shoot ourselves in the foot. We shoot ourselves in the foot. I'm not going to say that I could have come up with something that would revolutionize the entire industry, but I could have, but I didn't get a chance to do so. I'm going to give this number. Again, because I want people to call. I want you to tell me whether you're relating to me, whether you're not relating to me, where you know stories like this, or where you think that they are complete. Let's have this discussion. Is everybody so afraid of having this discussion that we don't do it? I've given you a number that you can call in. I'll give you time. I'll let you get your full, complete question out. I just hope that we don't disintegrate by using language that is inappropriate for a discussion such as this, so that we don't disrespect our children, our women, disrespect our being. Yeah, men can be disrespected too. But we are above that. We're seeking knowledge. We're seeking a confirmation of knowledge. I'm not going to be mad at you because you were brought up differently than I was. And I hope that the same thing is true. I have friends of different religions, and I am not about to join their religion. But we do have common ground in many other areas. When I first went there, I didn't know what a Mormon was or a Latter-day Saint, but I knew I wasn't going to sit in the back seat of heaven. Does that mean that I can't have a relationship with a person that does have that belief? Because I have. I've had friendships with people of that religion for over 50 years. We understand. But in my own family, I have people that are of a different religion still. We know that it's not going to lead anywhere if we get into a very deep question like this. You can ask me a question, and I can ask you a question. But we know what we can and what we can't do. This is what we're trying to do. I am going to continue to push that we do have open, honest discussions. I can't believe that of the people that listened, and we have listeners all over this world, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, Eastern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere, that some of you do not have questions that you want to talk about or discuss. We have a little over half an hour remaining on the program. I want to hear from you. I want you to know that we are going to discuss William Henry Johnson next week, because his unit fought longer in World War I than any other unit. I didn't say any other black unit. I said of any unit. They never lost an inch of ground. They never had a person captured. But yet and still, the town where they were trained has not seen wisdom enough to mention them. Not even to mention them. There has to be a reason that this is the case. To those of you in or near Spartanburg, I will tell you this, that there's a memorial to them. And most of you have passed that memorial, I guarantee you, tens of times and not known that it was there. It is almost invisible. Why? Why? I would think laying claim to this would be a good thing. But yet and still, we don't. I want to do something to make sure that we honor these people. In fact, Henry Johnson was given the Medal of Honor by America. It was presented to him by President Barack Obama. It took that long to do it. When we talk about Corporal Freddie Stowers, now, man, when I heard that name, I almost panicked, because I was just getting started on research. That's disconnected. And I looked for him, but my spelling of his last name was different than the actual spelling. I was spelling it S-A-U-E-R-S, like the spice, like people that I knew from Washington State. It's S-T-O-W-E-R-S. He is one of the first black soldiers in World War I to earn the Medal of Honor. It was presented by President Bush. Shows you how long it takes to recognize the accomplishments of blacks. It shows you how we get lost in the shuffle. Now, that could have made a big difference, because I look at one of the Medal of Honor winners that was bestowed posthumously. That means after their death. Had they known and recognized his accomplishments, his children who went into the military would have been fast-tracked. So not only was it unfair in his memory, his children didn't get the benefit that everybody else would. When we look at the middle class, and the middle class is where America extracts its greatness, we see that many people were able to attend schools. And that's good. I have no complaint about it, except the fact that we were left out. Most schools would not accept blacks. And if they did, it was a small number. So we had to contend with our black HBCUs in order to get in. When we look at housing, the GI Bill was a very good thing. But again, we were left out. In particular case, the reason we were left out is because the administration of this law, which was a national law, was under local control. And so we had people that had been putting down blacks for years, for centuries, for generations. That's how it happened. In Mississippi, over 2,000 white soldiers were given houses. I have no regret about that. But when I look at the number of blacks that got houses, I am very, very disturbed. That number is two, like 1-2, as opposed to 2,000. Something is wrong with this system, folks. I think that's one of the reasons that we have not talked about what is taking place. First off, most black soldiers were not soldiers as such. They were there to do the dirty work. Not too long ago, I did a post on Dory Miller. His first name is actually Doris, D-O-R-I-S. And he was also given a great award. But they had assigned him as a mess hall person, serving food. Many black soldiers went to war hoping that they would have an opportunity to fight for the principles of this country. In fact, there were two things they were fighting for: the principles of this country and the willingness to make a sacrifice for this country that should have earned them and their families the respect of a nation. Didn't happen. We love the country. Country did not love us back. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the basis for having this program. This is the basis under which we invite you to call in. There are people still today that relish using the N-word because it puts people down. I think we're too old, too mature to do that still. Why? There are good people. And I hate to sound like 45 on both sides of this issue. But I find that way too many on both sides are afraid to speak out, afraid to ask that question that they don't know the answer to. Many times when I went to church, I had questions that I wanted answers to that I did not get because, for one thing, I was too embarrassed to stand up and ask the question that I'm sure everybody in the world except me knew the answer. But I find out that I did not grow as a Christian until I asked the questions. Didn't mean that I was dumb, didn't mean that I was incapable. It just meant that I didn't know. There are lots of things. That's why I went to school, to learn. Here is your opportunity to learn. I'm not the only one that can answer or will be allowed to answer a question, because I want you to be able to talk among this community. You disagree with something, fine. Where else are you going to find thousands of people in which everybody agrees and of which you want to be a part of? Ain't necessarily the group that I want to be a part of. Because when I'm on a committee, I want to hear the objections. I want to know the other side of this issue. We were talking about this the other day. Pepsi Clear. Sounds like a good idea, but nobody bought into it. I mean, this was a valuable thing, and we were getting some of the unneeded chemicals out of our drinks. I think it's still a good idea. Is there a better way to bring it forth? Probably. But how do we get that? We discuss it. At one time, Coca-Cola was green. I'm not sure if it was green today, whether it would be as popular as it is today. But then again, it may be even more. We need these questions answered. We need to be able to disagree without being disagreeable. This is why, folks, and we're going to do this some more. I want you to have written down somewhere these questions that you don't have. As I was looking prior to coming on, Hamburg, city in South Carolina, black people wanted to vote. We're still trying to make it more difficult and more difficult and more difficult for people to do this simple act of voting. It means that you're involved, that you have an opinion, that you're respected enough as a citizen that you will take the time to go vote. One of the things that they look forward to was being able to input into their life their opinion, which in most cases meant a vote. Not just so that whatever they wanted would happen, but what the majority would want. But now we're looking at subterfuge, and we're looking at trying to make it sound one way when actually we know what's going on. Have a discussion about it. Should people be denied the opportunity to vote? We've had people go down to vote or to register to vote and have to ask a question, answer a question. How many bubbles are there in a bar of soap? And most of the people asking the question don't have the faintest idea That's when it crosses the line, in my opinion. Is there a reason for it? Why do some have to answer it and some not? But let me go back to Hamburg. We had about 100 black people killed trying to vote, trying to be a part of the American system. Now, there's a memorial there to the 100 people that were killed. Not a chance. Not a way in. Heck, let's keep it clean. What it comes down to is three white people were killed, killing the black people that were trying to vote. Now, which of those groups of people are the most American-loving people? They put up a memorial to people killing people to keep people from participating in the American dream. Can that be an embarrassing thing? Yes, it can. But it is made worse when we try to cover it up. We say, oh, no, can't teach my kid this, because that kid may be embarrassed. She might say, oh, man, I didn't know that. Can't teach that. What else are we going to do? We take books out that reach people. When I walk into the library, at least I've never had this experience, somebody runs up, grabs me around the neck, and shoves a book in my hand and said, you've got to read this. You've got to read this. Not usually what happened, folks. I walk in. If I'm looking for something, I can ask. If they don't have it, they'll usually try to help me find it. Libraries are more than a repository of books. They're a center of education. They're a center of knowledge. And we don't take advantage of them. It's like getting a book and eating the covers off of it, leaving the book untouched, unvarnished. That's not who we are. This is why I encourage you, and I'm going to keep encouraging you. Now, we have a couple of people online. I know them. I'm not sure that we're going to get to them today, because my main message is to get those of you who are not willing to call in to feel comfortable enough to call in. Make your difference known. I may ask for a first name, but generally not. So you can basically remain anonymous. My intent is not to try to make you look bad. My intent is to inform you of that which you may not know. So we go back to Eugene Boulard. I didn't give you a name before. But he was a fighter pilot in World War I. World War I, we didn't hear black pilots until World War II, when we heard about the Tuskegee Airmen. But let's look at them. They followed the orders that were given to them with precision. We had white fighters doing the same thing. But in a moment of glory, trying to extract glory for themselves, they failed the primary order to the war. We have Tuskegee Airmen looking for work. Looking for work. They should be able to be pilots. They've demonstrated their courage. They've demonstrated their ability to follow the commands that have been set out for them. They continue to do this. But somebody makes a decision. Somebody says, a customer might not want to fly for the black person. I'm sure that I have a different opinion here than many of you would. But by doing that, what do? We get those people that were willing to put their life on the line for this country and deny them the possibility of employment, deny them secondarily the ability to send their children to school, the ability to take full benefit of being an American citizen. Is that what you're so proud of? If it is, just say it. I'm sure that everybody is not agreeing with me, but I want you to feel comfortable enough to disagree. Hopefully we can talk about it. Just like my friends of different religions, different countries, I have never been so embarrassed as when I was talking to Native American people, that watching The Lone Ranger and Tonto was not the factual life as it took place. And while we're on that topic, there is a documentary coming out on Bass Reeves. B-A-S-S-R-E-E-V-E-S. We covered that topic years ago. Now, I sat and watched television. I watched hours and hours of that, not knowing that the real Lone Ranger was a black man, Bass Reeves, the first black marshal west of the Mississippi. I did not realize that in order to go into Indian Territory, as it was called, that you had to have a Native American with you. What I did not realize is how absurd that was in his case, because he spoke three of the five languages of the civilized tribes. He could get along very well without them. I did not realize at the time that the person writing the stories lived very close to Fort Smith, Arkansas, which is where he was headquartered. I did not realize that other marshals would select through the available warrants and go out to serve what they believed to be the soft points. It just said, give me the next 10, 12, whatever, and he'd go. He'd bring them back. He even brought his son in when he was accused of a murder. This man saw straight. He saw right and wrong. This is what you wanted all those people to be. But they weren't like that. I've spent years watching television as I've watched Western after Western after Western. What's the conclusion that you come to? There were no blacks in the West. All contrary. One out of every four cowboys on the range was a black person. We come to, oh my goodness, I knew this would happen. George McJunkin. George McJunkin was a black archaeologist. He discovered a separate species of buffalo. People didn't want to take his word for it because he was black. Most weapon wounds were made by obsidian. Obsidian's not the right word, but he came up with the fulsome point, which is quite a controversial point for a weapon. Again, nobody wanted to give him credit, all because, not the proof, but the color of his skin. Do you get to the point of being the best that you can be when you treat people like that? You know, I just had an article that I posted on Solomon Carter Fuller. He attended the same HBCU as I, Livingstone College in Salisbury, North Carolina. What's so significant about him? He was the first black doctor trained in the United States. We talk about James McComb Smith, the first black doctor in the United States. But he couldn't be trained here because they wouldn't allow him. They wouldn't accept him. But Fuller was a registered doctor. He performed autopsies. He was the first black psychiatrist in America. And he was chosen personally by Dr. Alzheimer's to continue his research. I think he died in 1914. So we're talking about a long time ago. But his research was not funded, not because of what was in his head, of what was not in his head, but because of the color of his skin. If you know anybody that has a loved one, a friend, relative, or whatever, that is suffering through this, you know the horrors of having gone through this process. We may be well down the road had we not taken this narrow view. We have people of every heritage that has contributed. But when we don't know, we shortcut ourselves. Dr. Leonidas Berry was the first doctor in America to perform a kidney transplant on two people who were not identical twins, Advancing medicine, Dr. Charles Drew, Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, Dr. Ruth Bath, and I am thankful for her because I've had cataract surgery on both eyes, and she revolutionized it. We need to give honor to these people who have pursued greatness. We talk about Dr. Barbara Ross Lee, the first woman to lead a medical facility. Barbara Ross Lee. That name Ross appears in her sister's work, Diana Ross. We have greatness all around us. We can only improve if we recognize that. Folks, it is now less than 5 minutes. I'll conclude this broadcast, but I want you to keep a list of the questions that you wish to ask. You can do it anonymously. If I'm on the air, I may more than likely call by the area code that you are. We'll use that as your moniker, your name, while we're on the air, so you don't have to feel that you're embarrassed. It's been my pleasure to provide you this information. I want you to remember January 13th or 14th, and we'll narrow this down. We're going to be talking about blacks in the American Revolutionary War. We had over 50,000 black people. And yes, they participated, some giving their lives for this country. And yet we want to act like they didn't exist. I'll see you again next Sunday. The program you're listening to is Did You Know? And I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Keep that phone number handy. Keep your list of questions handy. Because I need to know what it is you want to know. Comments, suggestions, greatly appreciated. I look forward to joining you again next Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and whatever that translates out to into your part of the world. Thank you for listening. Build up that courage. Ask that question. Give us that suggestion. And I'll see you again next week. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.